Okay. Today, I'm going to do something I've done kind of a couple of times so far, a similar thing, and try this. Everybody seemed to like, most people seem to like it, so I'm going to try doing it some more of these. And that is, I'm going to become the prophet Elijah today, okay? And tell the story of Elijah. And the story begins in 1 Kings chapter 17 and goes through 2 Kings chapter 2, but or 2-1 anyway. But I'm going to try to just kind of tell the story and tell as though I am Elijah. I didn't put on a hairy robe and I didn't put on I'm not eating any locusts and wild honey or that kind of thing today. But I'm going to try to tell the story as maybe Elijah might have told his own story, okay? So, well, my name's Elijah. I'm the Tishbite. I come from the other side of the Jordan River in Gilead. Now, the time at which I'm living is right at the end of the northern tribes during the divided kingdom. You see, when Joshua led the people into the promised land and they conquered the land, everything was good during his lifetime. But when he died, the people had no king and they began to do whatever they wanted to. And we had this terrible period of the judges where people would sin and God would send oppressors. Eventually they would repent. He would send a deliverer and they would be faithful for a while, but then they would turn back into sin again. And it was at the end of this time, the last two judges we talked about, were Samuel, Eli, and Samuel. And in the days of Samuel, the prophet and the judge, the people declared that they wanted to have a king so they'd be like everybody else. And Samuel warned them about what the consequences of that would be. And I gave them a king in my anger, but I took him away in my wrath. God did, anyway. And he said, okay, I'll give you a king after your own heart, like all the other nations. And that was Saul. But Saul messed up pretty badly, had the kingdom taken away from him. And he was followed by a man after God's own heart named David, who also lived a very good life, had a few things wrong in his life. But overall, he was a man dedicated to God's service. He was followed by his son Solomon, who also started off really well in serving God. But because of the marriages he had with foreign wives and idols and things, he ended up badly. Because of that, the Lord said he was going to take the kingdom away from Solomon's descendants. He wouldn't take him away completely. He would leave him some, but he would take away most. And so that happened when his son Rehoboam came along. He didn't listen to the wisdom of the older counselors, but he followed the wisdom of his friends he grew up with and decided to make things harder on God's people instead of lifting the load. And as a result, there was a division. And the northern part of 10 tribes were known as Israel, and the southern two were known as Judah and Benjamin, were known as Judah. Well, it was during this, every king in the north was bad. Every king in the north was wicked. And all of them were compared to that first of the kings, Jeroboam, who made Israel sin and made them turn away from God. Well, there was a series of really bad ones, but the guy that was there when I was prophesying, he was worst of all. He was worse than all the others that had come before him. And he was the son of Omri, and his name was Ahab. And not only was he a rebel against God and not serving God faithfully, he went and married a foreign woman, a Phoenician woman by the name of Jezebel. And even in your day and time, you know about Jezebel. What a wicked, wicked woman she was. And she incited Ahab to be wicked himself. And they worshipped Baal, the god of fertility, the rain god of the Phoenicians. And really went into trying to destroy all of the prophets of God. All the prophets of the Lord Jehovah, they sought to destroy every one of those things and to wipe out the memory of the Lord our God from the land of Israel. It was during that day, those days, that I showed up at the palace one day, and I announced to the king. Now I'm going to tell you, I didn't really fit in. I didn't come dressed like the people in the palace did. I had a coat of camel hair, and I had a leather belt around my waist. I ate locusts and wild honey, lived in the desert, was a very hairy man, and one that just stood out as being very odd and very different than everybody else. But I came before the king with great courage and boldness, and I said to him,
because of the sins you and your wife are committing in leading God's people away from me and into this Baal worship, because of that, it's not going to rain again until I say so. There won't be rain, there won't be dew anywhere in Israel until I say the word. Now, I prayed very diligently. I prayed very fervently that this be the case. And you know what? The Lord honored that prayer, and there wasn't any more rain. Now you might wonder, well, why did I say something like that about no rain? Well, let's remember the people are worshiping Baal. And Baal is the god of lightning and thunder and rain and fertility and all those things. And this is the direct attack upon him, saying there's only one true God. And that one true God is going to say it's not going to rain, and Baal can't do anything about it. And so, not only did I make that announcement and walk away, but the Lord had me leave town. And I went back across the river, and I sat by the brook there, and every day, every morning and every evening, I would drink water out of the brook, and the ravens would bring me food to eat. God had ravens, had the birds of the sky, scavengers, come find meat and bread for me and bring it for me to eat. I did that for a couple of years until finally the brook dried up. There wasn't any more water there. So the Lord told me to go up into Zarephath, a little town outside the country. In fact, really in the heart of Baal worship, and where all this Baal worship stuff even started, had me go to foreign, where Jezebel was from. And I went and hid out there at the home of a widow. Now, I met the widow when the Lord told me to do this. He said, I've talked to a widow about taking care of you. Well, I came to town. The widow was out there walking around picking up some sticks. And I came to her and I said, would you give me a drink of water? I'm really thirsty. Would you give me a drink of water? And while you're at it, how about give me something to eat too? And that widow said to me, well, you know what? I've only got I don't have nothing made right now. Well, I got a handful of flour, and I've got a little bit of oil left in the jug, and I gathered some sticks so I could go back and make a little cake for my son and I to eat for our last meal before we starve to death. And I told her, I said, well, that's all well and good, but I want you to make some and give it to me first. And she did. She made the cake and she brought me some of it first. And then whatever was left, she and her son ate. I told her, because of what she had done, that she would not starve. That she would have enough meal to make cakes every day until it rained again. And she'd have enough oil to put in those cakes until the famine was over. And that's exactly what happened. She was blessed. Now, one day, the woman was very upset because her son had gotten sick and he had died. And she came to me, she really blamed me and she blamed God and says, what have I done to you that you would kill my son, have God kill my son? I said, no, that's not right. And I took the boy from her. I carried him upstairs to my bedroom. I laid him on the bed and I lay across him and prayed for God to bring this boy back to life again. You know what the Lord did? He made that boy wake up. That boy was alive again. I presented him back to his mother, and then she was able to say, now I know there's no God but the God of Israel, and I know that you are his prophet, and you speak his words. Well, this all went on for about 3.5 years. And the whole time I was out of the country, King Ahab was searching desperately to find me. He wanted to find me and make me take the curse off and make it rain, because everybody was starving. There was no food. There was no crops. The animals were starving. No grass for them to eat. He had to do something. Well, finally the Lord told me it was time to go back home again. So as I was going and coming back into the land again, I met a prophet, probably by the name of Obadiah. He was a kind of a right-hand man to King Ahab, but he also was a servant of the Lord. You know, they've been killing all the prophets. Jezebel tried to kill every prophet that belonged to God in the land. But Obadiah had managed to rescue 100 of those servants, those prophets, and hid them by 50s in a couple of caves, and would bring them water and bread every day to eat and to keep them alive. But they had to hide out because Jezebel was wanting to kill them. Well, I showed up and came to Obadiah, and I said, Obadiah. See, Obadiah and Ahab have been out both to kind of divide and conquer. They went different directions, looking for some kind of grass for the animals to eat, some kind of water for them to drink, looking desperately for anything they could use to keep the animals alive. And he came across me. And I told him, go get Ahab and tell him to come over here and meet me. And Obadiah was very upset by the request. He said, oh, what have I done that you want to get me killed? He said, all my life, from my youth, I've served the Lord. I've hidden these 100 prophets in the caves. I'm feeding them. I'm taking care of them. Why would you want me to get killed? I'll go tell Ahab that you're over here, and he's been looking for you everywhere, been searching high and low, all over the country and everywhere else that he could go. Couldn't find you. And if I tell him you're here, and I come back, and the Spirit of the Lord's caught you away, and you're not here anymore, he's going to kill me. But I told him, don't worry about it. I'll be here when he gets back. So Obadiah went and told the king that I was there waiting for him. And boy, the king hurried over there as fast as he could to get to me. And when he got there, he pointed his finger about at me and he said, is it you, you troubler of Israel? You troublemaker? Well, I looked right back at him and said, I'm not the one that's troubled Israel. You are. You're the one that's forsaken the Lord's commands. You're the one that's rejected God's will and God's covenant. It's you that's the troublemaker, not me. I'm just pointing it out. I tell you what, I told him, why don't we have a contest and just find out who the true God is? You've got 450 prophets of Baal. You've got 400 prophets of Asherah. You've got 850 against one. You see, all of my work that I did was pretty much by myself. I was pretty much alone in doing the work that I did as a prophet. But now there's 850 of them, and there's one of me. And I proposed a contest up on Mount Carmel. I said, well, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll get all your prophets together, and they'll fix up their altar, and I'll fix up God's altar that's been broken down. And we'll take two bulls, and you pick the one you want, and I'll take the other one. And you cut him up and put him on the wood on your altar, and you call out to your God to light the fire. You're not going to light the fire. You're going to let your God light the fire. And I'm going to do the same thing. And whoever's God answers with fire is the true God. And I told the people when they all gathered around, you see, Ahab got everybody to come around. And I told the people, I said, how long go you limping between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. And if Baal is God, you follow him. And then we put them to the test. And I let the other guys go first. And they started early in the morning, 9 o'clock in the morning, starting to cry out to their God, to pray to him, to do everything they could to get his attention and get the fire from heaven. But nothing happened. At noon, I started mocking them a little bit. Started having a little fun with them. I said, oh, maybe you need to shout a little louder. Maybe he's far away and can't hear you, gone on a trip and can't hear you. Maybe he's in the bathroom. Maybe he's asleep. I don't know why he's not answering. You need to shout louder and do some more things to get his attention. And they started cutting themselves with knives and bleeding everywhere and crying out to their God to light this fire. But at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, still nothing had happened. So then I said, okay, your turn's over. Now it's my turn. And I took the altar of God that was broken down, and I put the 12 stones back together there, and I put the wood on the top of that, and I cut up the animal and put him on top of it. And then I dug a trench around the outside of the altar, and I said, go get 4 barrels of water and pour them over the top of this meat and this wood. And they did it. And I said, do it again. And then do it again. And 3 times they poured those barrels of oil over the top of everything and super saturated everything, so it was just completely, completely waterlogged. And then I got down on my knees and I prayed to God to show everybody who the true God was. And you know what happened? Lightning came from heaven and struck that altar, and it burned up the wood. It burned up the bull. It burned up the stones. It burned up the water. And it burned up the sand around the altar. It vaporized everything. And all the people saw that, and they were so amazed by this. It was just incredible. And they said, oh, the Lord, He is God. The Lord, He is God. You see, my name means God is Jehovah. That's what my name means. Elijah means Eli for God and Jah for Jehovah. And I'm the God who is Jehovah, the true and living God, the only God. And as a result, the people realized that Jehovah, Yahweh, was the real God and not Baal. Baal was impotent to do anything. Well, then I said, seize every one of those prophets of Baal and Asherah. Grab every one of them. We'll take them down to the river and I'll slaughter every one of them. And I did. Killed all 850 of them. Then I said to Ahab, smell the rains in the air. I believe some heavy rain's going to start coming. Now, we looked up in the sky and we didn't see any black clouds. There wasn't any sign of rain coming. But I went up to the top of the mountain with my servant. And I looked out over the ocean. Mount Carmel kind of juts into the Mediterranean Sea. And we got up there and I said, look out over the water there and tell me what you see. And my servant said, I don't see anything. I said, well, go back and do it again. Do it seven times. And seven times my servant went and looked and saw nothing. Until on the seventh time he came back and said, I see a little black cloud about as big as a man's hand. So I went down to Ahab and I said, Ahab, you better eat and drink something real quick, get some food, get in your chariot, and you better head down the mountain and get home before you get stopped by the floods. Well, he did that. He took off, and it started to rain, and rain, and rain, and rain. And old Ahab is racing down the mountain as fast as he can in his chariot, and the Lord gave me the strength, as an old prophet, gave me the strength to pull up my skirt, get it up away from my knees, and then I took off running. I ran ahead of him to Jezreel, 17 miles. I beat him there. Well, when we got there, Ahab went in and told his dear wife, Jezebel, what had happened and what I had done to all her prophets. And man, oh man, was she mad. She was as mad as she could be. And she said, you go take a message and give it to Elijah, and you say, may my gods do so much to me and more, if by this time tomorrow your head's still on your head, on your shoulders. You're not dead. I'll be honest with you. After that great victory on Mount Carmel and everything happened so wonderfully, I was kind of tired, kind of exhausted. I just run 17 miles and I was tired and didn't seem to make any difference. What we had done didn't seem to make any difference, and the people were still idolaters and still wicked and didn't really turn back to God. And I got scared and I ran. And I ran for a couple of days and got way away from there, away from her so she couldn't kill me. And I sat down under a broom tree and went to sleep. And after I'd slept for a while, an angel came and woke me up and said, here, you need some nourishment. And he baked a couple of cakes for me, a couple of cakes of bread for me, and some water, a jug of water. And I ate and I drank and went back to sleep again. And then he came and woke me up again and said, you need to eat again. You're going to need your strength for what you're about to do. And he gave me a job. So he realized I needed rest. He realized I needed nourishment. And he realized that I needed some work to do to get myself out of this depression I was in. You see, because I was telling God, please take my life. Go ahead and kill me. There's no point in me living any longer. I haven't accomplished anything with my work. I haven't been able to do anything to turn the people away from destruction. So go ahead and take my life. I'm the only one left. Nobody loves you but me. Well, the Lord came back to me. He didn't answer that prayer about killing me. Like, he never would answer that prayer, would he? He's not going to put me to death. And he said, I've got 7,000 that haven't bowed the knee to Baal. You're not the only one. I always keep a remnant of people. I always keep some people that are faithful to me. And just because you don't know who they are, you don't know their names, and you haven't met them, doesn't mean I don't have them. It doesn't mean they're not there. Anytime you feel alone, Elijah, just realize I still have others that are serving me and doing my will. So the Lord gave me a job to do. He said, I want you to go appoint Hazael to be king over Syria. And I want you to go appoint Jehu to be king over Israel, and I want you to go appoint Elisha to be your successor as prophet. You say, you're not going to be here much longer. And you need somebody to pick up that mantle and keep on running the race and keep on doing the work after you're gone. So I did all those things. And I found Elisha. And I know it gets confusing to think about Elijah and Elisha. But Elijah is who I am. And Elisha was the one that was my successor, the one that followed me. So he began to follow me and become a mentor of mine. In fact, I threw my mantle over the top of him when I called upon him to come and follow me. And he said, let me go home and kiss my mother and father goodbye. And then he slaughtered his oxen. He had 12 yokes of oxen. And he slaughtered them all, cooked them up, and gave them to all the people for dinner. He burned his bridges, so to speak. He committed himself. He wasn't giving himself the chance, the opportunity to come back again later. He was fully committed, put his hand to the plow, was not looking back. He was fully engaged. He'd burned the ships, so to speak, and was on his way to follow me and let me be his mentor. Well, we had all kinds of groups back then called the schools of the prophets. It was almost like modern-day seminaries where these guys that wanted to be prophets would come and learn the Word of God and learn how to preach and teach it. Because, you know, a prophet was, although the prophets sometimes spoke the future, that wasn't our primary job, was it? Our primary job was to be a speaker, a preacher, a teacher of God's law, of calling people back to faithfulness and calling them back to repentance when they had broken God's law. And so we trained a lot of men to do this. These were the schools of the prophets. And they were in several different towns, in Gilgal, in Jericho, in Bethel. And as a prophet, I made a circuit. I would go from one town to the next, and stop and visit with these guys and teach them and do the work. Well, a couple more things happened in my life that we need to report on. You see, God chose not to report on my youth and childhood and early life. He just really started when I showed up to talk to Ahab. But again, Ahab and Jezebel are pretty wicked, aren't they? Well, one day, Ahab was outside his palace, and he noticed a beautiful garden there, a beautiful orchard right there near the place, and found out that thing belonged to Naboth. And I went to Naboth, and I said, Ahab went to Naboth and said, let me have that vineyard you've got. It's so beautiful. I love it. I'd really like to have that garden and that orchard. And he said to him, if you'll give it to me, I'll give you a better one someplace else. Because that was right there by the palace, and it's real convenient for me. I'd really like to have that one. And if you want me to, I'll just pay you for it. I'll buy it from you for a good sum. Well, that Naboth, he told me the law of God said he couldn't give away or sell his ancestral plot. And so he told me no. And that really hurt my feelings. It really made me upset. And I went home with a sad face and lay on my bed facing the wall and refused to eat or talk to anybody or associate. I just had to sit there, lay there and pout because I didn't get what I wanted. And my wife Jezebel came in and said, honey, what's wrong? Jezebel came in to Ahab and said, honey, what's wrong? And he says, Naboth won't sell me his vineyard. I want that vineyard. He won't give it to me. You know what she said to him? She said, aren't you the king of Israel? Don't you get whatever you want? You get up here and eat some supper and all that, and you just leave it to me. And so what she did was she wrote a letter in Ahab's name and sealed it with his seal and sent it to the elders and the leaders of the city and asked them to proclaim a feast in honor of Naboth and to honor him as a great man in the community, but then hire a couple of worthless fellows who will get up and give false testimony, accusing him of blasphemy against the king and against God. Well, they did that. In the mouth of two or three witnesses, they established the word, even though they were lying, and the people took Naboth out and stoned him and killed him. When word came back to Jezebel that Naboth was dead, she said, honey, you can have that orchard now. It belongs to you because Naboth's dead. You don't need it anymore. And so Ahab went out there and started inspecting the thing and looking around, and he was really happy because he now had that orchard he wanted so bad. Well, the Lord told me to go talk to him. So I went over there, And I said, called out Ahab's name. And he said, is it you, my enemy? You found me, my enemy? And I told him, I got a message for you from the Lord. The Lord told me that you and all your male descendants are all going to be killed. And the dog is going to lick your blood. And your wife Jezebel, she's not going to end up getting buried anywhere. She's going to be eaten by the dogs. And they're going to lick up her blood just like they do yours. And all your male descendants, they're all going to die because of what you've done. Your dynasty is now over. Well, when I told him that, a remarkable thing happened. Ahab humbled himself. He repented. He told God he was sorry. He actually tried to correct what he had done. And you know what God did? God said, I won't bring that disaster on you in your lifetime. It'll happen during your son's lifetime. God actually showed mercy on him. This most wicked of all the kings, the one that had done all these horrible things, God was going to grant him some reprieve because he changed his attitude. So Ahab goes back home and lives on for a while until one day, now he had a connection with Jehoshaphat in the south. In fact, their daughter married his son. And that was a bad, bad decision. But the day came when Ahab decided that he and Jehoshaphat ought to join forces and go up and take back Ramoth-Gilead from the Syrian armies. And they'd already been having war with Syria, and God had given Ahab victory a couple of times over this vastly superior forces. But now they decided to go fight against Syria and take Ramoth-Gilead back. And Jehoshaphat says, good idea, let's go do it, but let's ask God, as a prophet first, whether it's a good idea or not, he's going to give us victory. Now, they didn't come ask me, but they asked the false prophets that hung around the palace. And they the prophets all said, yes, go, God's with you, he'll give you victory. Jehoshaphat wasn't very satisfied with that. He said, isn't there another prophet we could ask about this? And Ahab said, oh yeah, there's Micaiah, but I don't like him much. He always prophesies bad things about me. I don't like him much. He said, let's get him and see what he says. So they sent a messenger to get him. They brought him over. And on the way, the messenger said, hey, listen, all 400 of the prophets have said this is a good idea, so you just make your message match theirs when you get there. Micaiah said, I'll tell you what, I'll just say whatever God tells me to say, no matter what anybody else says. And so Micaiah came into the courtroom, and they said, is it okay for us to go? Is God going to give us victory? Oh, yeah, go. Everything's good. I told you to always tell me the truth and not make up stuff, Ahab said to him. He said, okay, you're going to die in the battle. And the people are going to be like sheep scattered without a shepherd. I told you he's always that way. Always says bad things about me. He said, well, let's lock him up in jail. And when I get back, we'll let him out. And he said, if you come back, I'm not a prophet. And so in fighting the battle, Ahab thought he'd fool God on this. He dressed like a private instead of like the king. He had Jehoshaphat dressed like the king. And he went around like a ordinary infantryman or charioteer. And the soldiers of the Syrians were looking to, they wanted to kill Ahab. That's who they wanted to kill. And when they chased Jehoshaphat, they found out that it wasn't Ahab and they didn't kill him. But then a soldier grabbed a bow and arrow and just shot it. You know where that arrow ended up? Between the creases in Ahab's armor. And he was mortally wounded by it. And he sat in the chariot during the war and said, I'm mortally wounded to sit here and watch. And he bled out. And all the blood went down to the floor of the chariot. And after the battle was over, they took him back and they went by the pool and washed out the chariot, and the dog stood around and licked up the bloody water, just like I had told him would happen. Well, then we find that Jezebel also is taken. King Jehu says, throw her down out of the tower, and they did, and she died. But they went and ate lunch first, And after lunch, I said, you know what? She's a queen. We need to go out there and give her a proper burial. And they went out there, and all that was left was her skull and her hands and her feet. The rest had been eaten by the dogs, just like I said. Well, we could go on and on with stories like that, but the end of the story comes when, as you come into 2 Kings, the end of the story comes when Elisha is with me one day, and we go over to the Jordan River. And I took my cloak, and I hit the water with it, and the water separated. We went through on dry land. And as we were going along, several of the people in the schools of the prophets would say, don't you know that your master is going to heaven today? This is his last day. He said, I know, but don't say anything. Don't say anything. I know. And every town they went to, they were told, he's going to leave today. And so finally, I said to Elisha, what do you want me to do for you? Tell me what you want me to do for you. He says, well, I want a double portion of your spirit. And he said, well, that's hard. You're asking a hard thing. You're hard for me to do that. But if you see me when I leave, you can have what you ask for. And if not, you won't. And every place we went, I said, Elisha, why don't you stay here? I'm going to move on and do something else. Everybody just stay here, and I'm moving on to do another project. And Elisha said, no way I'm leaving you. I'm going to watch you every second of the day. I'm not going anywhere except with you. Well, finally, a chariot of fire came down out of the heavens and picked me up and took me to heaven. I was changed in the twinkling of an eye, given my spiritual body, taken on to heaven. And I'm only the second person who never died. Remember, Enoch was translated and taken to heaven from Genesis chapter 5. But and now I'm the second one. Only I prayed twice for God to kill me, to put me to death because it wasn't worth living. And I'm one of two men that never died. I went on to heaven. Now, my story on earth was really kind of over, but that isn't the end of the story. And I'll just wrap this up fast. When you come to the New Testament, other than Abraham and David and Moses, I'm the fourth most mentioned person in the New Testament. In fact, at the end of Malachi says that when before the Messiah comes, Elijah has to come, prepare the way for him. Now, that wasn't going to be me physically. That actually, we found out later, was going to be John the Baptist coming in the spirit and the power of Elijah. But people asked him, are you Elijah? And he said, no. They asked Jesus that too and said, are you Elijah? He said, no. But when Jesus stood in Nazareth preaching to his people, saying a prophet's not without honor except in his own country, and accused them of unbelief, he used the example of in the days of Elijah, there were many widows in Israel, but I was sent only to the widow of Zarephath, the foreigner. He mentions that story in there. And coming down from the Mount of Transfiguration, the disciples of Jesus ask, isn't Elijah supposed to come first before you come? And his answer was Elijah did come. And they did to him what they wanted to. But that Elijah was John the Baptist. Well, one other thing with John the Baptist, and that is on the Mount of Transfiguration. Jesus was transformed into bright light and seeing a glimpse of his real glory. And he was standing there talking to me and to Moses. Peter wanted to make a tabernacle for all three of us. But we disappeared, and God spoke to heaven and pointed to Jesus and said, this is my son, listen to him. So our role was over, wasn't it? And one last thing, James chapter 5 in the New Testament talks about the fact that I was just an ordinary man. Think about that. You think about me being a great prophet and great man and all that? I was a man of like passions and a few. I was just an ordinary man that was willing to be used by God. And I prayed to God fervently, and for 3.5 years, it didn't rain. And then when I prayed again, it did rain. I think you live in a society in the world that's very much like the one I lived in. Everybody was wicked, corrupt, evil, turned their back on God. Things were really bad where it looked like there was no hope of turning things around and changing things. But through my work of preaching and teaching, some revival took place. And through your work, revival can take place. And instead of cursing the darkness, I shined the light. And I tried to help save the country I loved and the people I loved and give them, bring them back to God so they could be blessed by him again. And you have a similar circumstance in your life where you live in a place that's really corrupt and wicked and evil and has lost God's blessing. But you can do something. There can be revival, and it can begin with you. You can be the one God uses, an ordinary, average, everyday person, freely giving themselves to God, can solve the problems and save the world. I hope you'll be inspired by my story, and you'll begin to write your own. Are you accepting the invitation of Jesus today? You need to become His child. Song is prepared. We're going to sing it and give you the opportunity to say yes to Jesus, to come to Him, be part of the solution to the problem, that His will might be done on earth as it is in heaven. Let the need be known as we stand to sing.
I am longer to linger, charmed by the world's delight, things that are high.